Back together again, you and I chatting it up, starting a brand new week Monday, the 27th of January, 2025 on Connecticut Today, where we welcomed GOP State Rep Greg Howard, an active duty police officer, to the show to discuss a proposal to further strengthen the state's Trust Act. I also offered a few of my own thoughts on President Trump's undocumented migrant crackdown. CBS News politics reporter Olivia Rinaldi joined us regarding the ongoing ICE raids and Democrats trying to form a cogent response. And we wrapped up the show with University of New Haven Associate Professor of Accounting and Taxation, Dr. James Mose, on President Trump's threat of using tariffs as political tools. Well, you've undoubtedly heard of the Trust Act here in Connecticut. It was first passed in the Malloy years in 2013 and had another iteration of it a few years ago in 2019. Well, several Republicans in the General Assembly, in the State House and State Senate say, hey, this may go a little too far in hamstringing local law enforcement into helping as they can with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement folks. Remember that local law enforcement here in Connecticut, out of the eastern part of the state, is Republican State Rep Greg Howard. Again, we've had Greg on the show several times, not only working hard in state government, but he is a law enforcement officer. Hey, Greg, it's Paul again here. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. I'm well. Thanks again for having me. Always a pleasure.
And thanks, Greg, for stopping by. We appreciate it. Well, you have an interesting outlook on this, Greg, I'm sure, because this kind of hamstrings local law enforcement, does it not, of which you are a member. You're still an active police officer in the eastern part of the state, right?
Yeah, for sure. I'm still a detective down in Stonington, 23 years on the job, and my third term now in the legislature, and I still serve in the Judiciary Committee and ranking on public safety. So it's falling right in my wheelhouse for sure.
So explain the Trust Act here, because it's popped up in the news again, Greg, the first iteration, the second one, and now your folks on the other side of the aisle there want to make it even stronger. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, what they're trying to do is outrageous, quite frankly. And you know, Paul, we've talked a lot of times, and I don't use that word lightly. I mean, what they're doing and what they have done is outrageous. And I'll start with why we're talking about it right now. One of the main reasons that we're speaking about the Trust Act, you know, some 6 years after it was amended, is because the Federal Department of Justice has issued a memorandum that anybody who interferes with ICE will be prosecuted, investigated and prosecuted by federal prosecutors. And that creates a real problem, because the Connecticut Trust Act does just that. The state law actually prohibits law enforcement officers, but for a very narrow set of circumstances, to cooperate with ICE. So we may have our law enforcement officers in a position in this state where if they take somebody into custody, even for a murder, and ICE says, well, that person's here illegally, we want to come in and talk to them, the law enforcement officer can't even give ICE agents access to that individual. The federal government could very much look at that as though they're interfering with ICE's responsibilities. But yet, if the officer gives the ICE agents access, he's violating state law. It's a precarious situation. I was on the phone just a couple hours ago with the AG's office trying to get some clarification for these officers, because it's just not a place to put them. And you know, even the Police Officer Standards and Training Council, the governing body of police certification, and they also distribute most of the statewide policies and best practices, has put out a general notice. And right at the top, it says law enforcement officers should consult with their own counsel on these issues. What a terrible thing to say to, you know, a few thousand police officers in the state of Connecticut, that you have to get your own counsel to decide how to navigate these state laws, because we've put you in such a precarious situation. What a horrible, horrible thing is going on.
So, Greg, when you, and again, I understand there may be privileged conversations, and please excuse me if they were, but what were you told by William Tong's office? Did you get any clarification, or are they just trying to take the air out of the ball here?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is get a little bit of clarification on what I'm asking them, which is, you know, what kind of position are you putting police officers in here? I'm not sure that they were even aware of the DOJ memo to begin with, which brings me to the second reason why we're discussing the Trust Act. And that is because William Tong has proposals that would make it even more difficult. And if I could just back up a little bit. What the Trust Act basically does is it prohibits local and state law enforcement from cooperating with ICE, again, but for a narrow set of circumstances. Now, I want to be clear about this, Paul. neither I nor my Republican colleagues feel that local and state law enforcement resources should be used to do the job of ICE. That mm-hmm. is, the federal government has the budgets, the resources, and the department to do just that. The job of our law enforcement in this state is to enforce state statute. But that doesn't mean that in the course of their duties enforcing state statutes, they can't cooperate with other agencies like we do all the time. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if I'm a police officer in Danbury and a Danbury resident calls me and says, hey, my house got broken into, and I look at the person's ring camera and I see a vehicle and a suspect, and it's the same vehicle and suspect in a string of burglaries.
Yeah.
And next week, a police department across the border in New York arrests the same guy. And then I call them up as the investigator from Danbury and sure. say, I'd like to interview that guy. And they say, well, it's not our job to enforce Connecticut law, so we're not going to cooperate with you. You can't interview the guy, and we're not giving you information.
Oh,
that's insane.
It's insane.
Right?
It's insane.
Right?
And Greg, listen, I know you have relationships on the other side of the aisle, but you must look at them sometimes. With all due respect, I'd start laughing. Like, what are we doing here? Are we serious about that?
What they're doing is quite clear. And if you look at the press conference that the Republicans did last Thursday on our proposal, we took a very reasonable approach. And any opposition to that on their side confesses their exact agenda, which mm-hmm. is to protect felons in this state. It's exactly what they want to do. They throw out this notion of due process and say, well, if we allow police officers in this state to notify ICE when they have somebody in custody who has not been convicted of anything,
yeah.
just arrested, notify ICE that they're here and illegal, that's a violation of due process. That is a nonsense argument. Due process is when the officer has to give the person due process in the crime that they're prosecuting, which would be the crime they're arrested for.
Mm-hmm.
Simply calling ICE, the proper authority who does immigration investigations, and reporting, hey, there's an individual here who says he's illegal. We have him under arrest. We're letting you know because that's what you do. If that is a violation of his due process, then I guess you'd have to make an argument that if my wife looks out the window today and sees somebody breaking into my neighbor's house and calls the local police
yeah.
to report
yeah.
to the proper authority what she believes to be a violation of laws they investigate, she must be violating that person's due process. What a ridiculous argument to make, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're throwing out terms like due process and acting like we have some crazy idea. What Republicans' idea is basically saying when you're arrested for and by the way, Paul,
yeah.
only for a C felony above. That's how reasonable we're trying to be with the criminal protectors on the other side of the aisle.
So stealing a candy bar wouldn't fall into the purvey here?
It wouldn't fall into the purvey of notifying ICE, not in our proposal, correct.
Jeez.
And their argument is, well, you're notifying them just on an arrest without a conviction.
Oh.
And I say, okay, well, let's talk about that for a minute. Under Connecticut general statutes today, if a person gets arrested for a domestic violence-related offense, even yeah. a breach of peace,
yeah.
push their wife down, for example, not condoning the behavior, but a minor arrest, breach of peace.
Sure.
So our state law says that individual can have his firearm seized from him at the scene, and then he goes to the next available court date, at which point a protective order is always issued that bars him from possessing firearms.
Mm-hmm.
So we're telling United States citizens in this state in Connecticut that your Second Amendment right and your amendment afforded to you in the Connecticut Constitution to possess firearms is stripped from you, not on a conviction, Paul, just on an arrest. And we do that because it's in the best interest of public safety. And then yet my Democrat colleagues are going to stand there and say, well, if you notify ICE on an arrest, not strip anybody of their rights, simply notify another authority that they may have interest in this person,
yeah.
you're violating their due process. Can you, without a legal mind, that is an outrageous.
Yeah,
argument.
Listen, Greg, I wouldn't last 5 minutes in law school or during a law school exam, but yeah, it just sounds, Greg, and we have about 30 seconds left, but I want to get your final thought on this. It just sounds like they are beholden to people telling them, hey, you better not even agree to this because you'll have heck to pay in the elections. Otherwise, Greg, I don't get this. I just don't understand it.
Well, it's difficult to understand. I think too many people in Connecticut are happy to be spoon-fed a Democratic line and just go with that talking point. I hope folks dig down on it. You can find the HRO proposal online. You can go to CTN to last Thursday and see the House Republicans roll out on our press conference of exactly what we're proposing, and more importantly, what we are not proposing. And we are not proposing that state and local law enforcement become a branch of ICE in this state, but simply proposing common sense solutions to ensure public safety in the state of Connecticut.
Greg Howard, Republican state rep and also a present duty police officer as well. Greg, always good to chat with you. We'll chat down the road, my friend. Thank you.
Very well, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right, folks. So there's a guy who is in the law enforcement business and a guy who was also a law enforcement officer telling you with due documentation by how the laws read and his experience that there is lunacy going out of the Capitol. So as I usually do 4 to 5 times a year, I go to my, this morning I went to my local mechanic, guy I've been going to for 30, 35 years, a guy I implicitly trust with my car. Listen, I don't drive a ritzy car. It's like a $17,000 when I bought a new off lease about 5 years ago. One more year to go on the payments. Thank you very much. It's about a $17,000 mid-sized sedan. There's a million of them on the road. But I try to take care of it because I say for right now, it's the only one I have. And what I'm really stern about is preventative maintenance. I make sure I check and change the lube oil and filter, make sure the tires are good. I rotate the tires every 6 or 7,000 miles. You'll squeeze a few more months out of the tires if you do that. You know, no matter the fact that it costs 20 or 25 bucks every time I do it, fine. So I'm into preventative maintenance. Now, if I didn't do preventative maintenance on my car, if I never rotated the tires, if I never checked, as I do from time to time, especially when the weather goes hot to cold or hot, if I never check the air pressure, if I never change the oil, if I never change the oil filter, if I went way beyond the manufacturer's recommendations, should I be surprised if I never did that? If I'm one of these people, you say, did you change the oil on your car? Well, I'm supposed to change what oil? How do I change it? I'm not that guy. But if I was that guy, or you were that guy or gal, would you then be surprised if you took your car to a dealership or the local filling station or your local mechanic and said, gee, is this not running right? It's not steering right and everything. And then, well, let's put it up on the rack and see what you got. Up on the rack, and you see the tires are bald, the exhaust system is rotting out, the suspension is shot, and the engine is almost seized up because you didn't do the maintenance. No, you shouldn't be afraid of that. You shouldn't be surprised with that. Nor, and here's the point here, here's where I'm going at, you shouldn't be mad at the mechanic because you took your car willfully into the mechanic because it got to a point where you knew something wasn't right. And as much as you tried to coax yourself and talk yourself into the point, hey, the car is raw, car is fine, it's just me that's wrong. No, 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 no. The vehicle is breaking down. And then the mechanic slips you the estimate to do the tires and the suspensions and the tune-up and everything in the lube oil and filter, and you're seeing an estimate, $900, $1,000, $1,500, $2,000. And what is your and your mechanic will say, well, had you done this on the right schedule, we'd be talking about a couple of $100 here and there, maybe a day or a day and a half in the shop, and you'd be fine. Preventative maintenance. You know who Donald Trump is right now? He's that mechanic. Whether you like it or not, and I got into a big social media to-do with friends of mine over the weekend. I posted, hey, you may not like the guy. You may not like what he says to you, but he's pointing out problems. Now, here's the other thing. Besides being the guy who's the mechanic, that when he gives you the dollar figure on the estimate, you go, oh. Besides being that guy who does that or did that or will do that for you, that's only part of the problem. The other part of the problem is to people that voted for the guy and to people who didn't vote for the guy, here's the bottom line. He's doing what he said he was going to do. just the way your mechanic would say, hey, don't get mad at me because I've been telling you this for the past year and a half, 2 years. You got to fix your suspension. You got to get new tires, or you have to rotate the tires. You got to properly inflate them. You got to change all the hoses and belts on the engine, because if not, it's going to start to break down. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. Don't shoot the messenger here. And again, I put this on social media. I was just communicating with a couple of other people, and people, you know, dropped into the conversation, and I got from a good friend of mine. I like the guy. I've known him for years. Well, he's a convicted felon. Well, guess what? The entire country knew that. And 50% plus one voted for him. Again, don't get mad at your mechanic when he gives you the estimate. Don't get mad at your other friends when you say, hey, do you take your car in for a minute? Well, of course I do. It's the only one I have. I make sure I do what I have to do every 2 or 3 or 4 months. Again, you may despise Donald Trump, and that's fine. We need a vibrant two-party system. But my God, some of the stuff I'm seeing is ludicrous, is crazy. He told you what he was going to do, and he's doing it. I tried to tell my friends over the weekend, nobody cares about the 34 felony convictions. Do you understand? He said he was going to do deportations, and the deportations are underway. What a shock. A guy who does what he says. You may not agree with that. I understand that. I have a lot of friends who don't agree with that. I don't agree with some of the stuff he does, but you know what? God bless him. He does what he says. And is that the real problem? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Is that the real problem here? Is it not so much the deportations or the ICE raids or the stuff he does with that fool that he made look like the president of Colombia down there? Is it the fact that we're just not used to having somebody in the White House who by and large, does what he says? And he doesn't care if people like him or don't. He just doesn't. Isn't that refreshing? You may hate the guy. I understand it. Do you hate what he's doing? Or is it the fact that he's the guy that suddenly does what he says or did what he said he was going to do? What's the problem here? Don't blame the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger. You know, don't get mad at the mechanic when he tells you, hey, I've been telling you this for 3, 4, 5 years. We got to do this. And then you got to do it. Is America that thin-skinned? Remember, he didn't squeak in with a non-win in the raw vote of the popular vote. He won that, too. So you tell me, what's the problem? Or is America just spineless? See, as a country, if we had listened to our mechanic or mechanics in charge who were telling us, hey, you better do maintenance on this thing like the immigration system, like the migration system, we wouldn't be here right now. Now you're getting all these economists are saying, well, hey, you know, if Trump makes all the illegals leave, then have you seen this? Lettuce is going to get more expensive. Who cares? The people who voted for Donald Trump don't care. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. But this is a new reality now. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Are you surprised at this? Is this what you wanted? At least half the country wanted it. And all we got is Rosa DeLauro scrambling around with their holding news conferences about how eggs are still too expensive. I swear to you, they did. This was a big press conference, as we say in the business. Well, he hasn't lowered the price of eggs yet. Oh, my God. Has he thrown the left into a tizzy? They have no idea how to respond to this. They don't. It is fascinating to see. But are you surprised by this? I'm not. do you like this or not? And you got Paul Krugman out there today saying, well, you know, if he does this, this could severely cripple home building. Well, all right then. You know why? Because there were too many illegals working in home business. That's the problem. The problem isn't what Donald Trump is doing. He's uncovering things. He's showing people things. Whether you like him or not, whether you think he's Lucifer or Satan or Beelzebub or Chairman Mao or Chou En Lai or whatever, that's not the issue. The issue is he's doing exactly what he said he was going to do starting on day one. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe a lot of you folks out there on both sides of the aisle can take a politician who, geez, my God, is actually doing what he said. Oh, my God, we can have that. Oh, but your lettuce and your guacamole. I actually read a story the other day in the New York Times that basically said, well, you know, you have to deal with the drug cartels in Mexico because they're business people, too. And if you this was done with a straight face. Well, they control a lot of Mexican agriculture. Yeah, that'll get people's minds turned around. Yeah, we need to deal with the drug cartels. No, we don't. It's mind-numbing. This national psychosis that people are doing right now is the best thing that could happen. What have I been saying for you, to you for 3 weeks? Let the screaming and yelling begin. Let it begin, because we need it. All families need to scream and yell at each other. And I don't care how much guacamole costs. I don't care how much my lettuce costs. I don't care how many houses are not built onto. I don't care at all. What I care is we solve a national problem. And sometimes surgery ain't neat. A lot of blood you got to dabble up. Pat's with us in Derby to start us off. Hey, Pat, good afternoon.
How are you, Paul? Listen, I wanted to, it's funny you mentioned about the mechanics analogy there, because when I was a kid back 40, 50 years ago, there was a mechanic in town that was the roughest, toughest, you know, chain smoker, tattoo, and he had the worst attitude, and yeah, he badmouthed everybody. But you know what? If you wanted your car fixed, everybody went to this guy.
Really?
Because he could fix anything, he could do anything. But, you know, it's just like anything. It's like if you want the best doctor, who cares what his personality is?
So he wasn't Mr. Warmth, is what you're saying, Pat.
Right, exactly. I mean, so, you know, people can't get over Donald Trump, but he's getting the job done.
Yeah, and
what
Pat,
does it matter?
Yeah, Pat, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Look, and the guy's not perfect, and some of the pardons he handed out for January 6th I have a real problem with. But overall, I think people are stunned. It's like if you're not looking and you walk into a low-hanging sill, right? Oh, Mono, what was that? Oh, geez, I wasn't paying attention. Well, we've been telling you for years and years now, you better fix this immigration thing, because when we finally decide that we're going to elect somebody who's not going to give to you-know-whats about it and do what he said he's going to do. I mean, that's the whole thing. And now all these articles over the weekend from the various, not even far-right publications, I mean, The Hill, Politico, it's got the other side of this guy. And again, this is a good thing. The Democrats, progressives, fine. Come up with a message. They have no idea how to counteract this. None. They have none. I'm stunned. I'm reading all this stuff. And you've got some pretty well-known people in the media. You know, Stephen A. Smith, Bill Maher saying, hey, what did you expect when you don't have a cogent message? Henry in the Valley. Henry, what's up?
Hey, Paulie.
Hey.
I just, see, everything I'm going to say now is not my opinion. Maybe in the end, just let me say.
Okay, we got about 90 seconds. Average. Got a minute and a half.
Let me just do a quickie there. You just got to get out of the dictionary. They've been saying all along, and I'm not talking for Trump or against Trump, he's going to bring down democracy. That's all I kept on hearing.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, he has brought back democracy. Because there's five major governments in the world. One is communism, that means it's a commune. There's a monarchy, which is a king. Then there's dictatorship, which is one guy in power. Then democracy means majority rule.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means.
Yeah.
If you look it up, go to school, go to a you know, a university, the it means majority rule.
Yeah.
The majority is ruling.
You're right, Henry. Aren't that's they? Good. I do have to run, Henry. But you're right. The majority picked this guy. And he and Henry, that's the point. Very salient point. He went out there. Well, Mr. Trump, are you really going to do this? Yes, I am. And I'll do it on day one. And you got a bunch of mouth breathers out there going, oh my God. Oh, he's actually doing it. Speaking of the White House, CBS News correspondent Olivia Rinaldi is on the line to tell us about the goings-on. Hey, Olivia, it's Paul. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm here in sunny Miami, Florida, heading into Trump's golf course shortly for an event. I'm good. How are you?
Hey, so what event is coming up? Clue us in there.
So we're here at Trump International in Doral, technically, so greater Miami. But this is a meeting that's happening today with House Republicans. Trump is down here. And ultimately, the conversation is really centering around his legislative agenda. What can they accomplish in these next coming weeks, months that are exactly what Trump wanted, what he had campaigned on? So think things like no tax on tips, more money for immigration. These are all things that they're having conversations about here in Doral. Just in the last couple of minutes, I've been walking around the grounds, and yeah. I just ran into Speaker Johnson, who had finished a press conference. So Trump is going to speak here shortly, around 5 p.m., hopefully, and we should get a little bit more indication on any news they've come to an agreement on.
Well, I got to tell you, Olivia, for you folks on the White House press detail and on the presidential detail, I mean, in just the last week, have you had time to breathe? I mean, it's been nuts over the past week after a relatively quiet period before that.
You know, I never covered the Biden White House, but I did cover the Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I have the stamina. You know, I've been covering this closely. I'm well conditioned. But yeah, it's been a lot of news of everything from immigration and ICE raids to some of these executive orders on DEI to some clearing out of the National Security Council that we've been learning about. If there's a new thing, not only every day, but every hour, there's a lot going on.
Yeah. And also now I'm reading over the weekend, you probably read the same things, too, that, you know, the Democratic Party is kind of sitting there just watching this, Olivia, happen all around them. And now James Carville is telling him, hey, don't do anything yet. Relax. Let him punch himself out. But they're kind of bereft, at least at this point, are they not? And we're only a week in of kind of a counter message here, aren't they?
Right. Well, I mean, you're right. We're only a week in, but it's interesting to point out that Republicans right now control the presidency, the Senate, the House, the Supreme Court, larger federal courts around the country. So it seems like the stars have really aligned for them. But yeah, you hear Carville and other Democratic leaders saying, let's just take a moment, pause, let them do what they're going to do, trip themselves up, that sort of thing. But also, I thought it was interesting. Some senators, I believe it was Tina Smith in the Washington Post, said something to the effect of, we're not going to do the outrage over everything, right? So we're not going to do the outrage over, oh, he wants to take control of Greenland and he wants to take control of the Panama Canal. But if it's something that impacts their constituents, that's something they're willing to fight the fight over. I thought that was an interesting departure from what we had seen eight years ago now, in 2017, where everything required a reaction.
Olivia Rinaldi, CBS News from Florida. Olivia, thank you. Take care, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take
care. All right. Olivia Rinaldi there, CBS News. The word tariffs now. Yeah, most people know what they are on goods, exported goods, imported goods, whatever. Who pays them? But they're being used, or at least alluded to the use of, for political purposes. And this was a past thread of who was former President Trump at the time and now again has been reelected. And joining us again to chat about this, an associate professor of accounting and taxation at the University of New Haven, Dr. James Mose, rejoins us. Hey, Dr. Mose, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Good. How are you, Paul?
Not too bad. Tariffs, and more tariffs. For my audience here, just a basic explanation, Dr. Mose. When we're talking about a tariff, an import or an export tariff, what are we talking about here?
We're talking about a charge, a toll charge on goods being brought into the United States.
So when we see a percentage, for example, and the president saying, hey, I'm going to slap 25% here, so that would be 25% on either a total shipment or an individual unit. How does that work?
Basically, it's going to be order by order or shipment by shipment, I think.
Yeah.
But it can be rolled back to the individual products within a shipment if there is a different tariff percentage for different products.
We're already paying tariffs and charging tariffs, aren't we? I mean, aren't tariffs at some base level, Dr. Mose, part of international shipping and business or not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. However, there are certain exceptions to some of the tariffs.
Okay.
Certain countries have preferential treatment. They don't have tariffs. Certain goods and services or goods don't have tariffs on them.
So it's
relative to all.
Yeah. So why is that? Is that because there's such a volume of something or something is so consumed or exported that the tariff doesn't really make any sense? Is that why?
Or so necessary. I think all of the above, or so necessary.
Mm. So Mr. Trump has, over the past few days, he was saber-rattling with Colombia and everything. And, of course, we get a lot of bananas from them, oil, coffee, of course. That sent a shiver up and down the spine of people here in the country. Do you think, Dr. Mose, are these effective political tools or not?
Well, they seem to be. I mean, both with Colombia. I mean, Colombia has acquiesced to some of the Trump team's requests.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to accept the deportees,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Nobody wants tariffs. I mean, even with Canada, I mean, Canada has somewhat acquiesced to some tighter border controls. I mean, he's done this all over the place. And you know what? It's working. And the funny thing is, nothing has happened yet.
Yeah. And how do you buy the argument, Dr. Mose? Well, yeah, anybody can slap a tariff, but it's ultimately paid for by the consumer. Is that true, or do some tariffs get absorbed by the wholesaler, the distributor, or is it always you and I who pay it?
In general, tariffs are inflationary because they increase the price of goods in the U.S., imported goods in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
There are some, they're borne by and paid by the importer of record.
Mm.
Sometimes if it's a small tariff, sometimes the importer will not alter the price, they'll absorb it. With big tariffs, they're going to pass it through. They have no choice because their margins are not going to be that great.
Sure. So we're, automobiles, say from China. I know for an example that a lot of countries see that as a threat. So, I mean, I saw tariffs of 40, 50, 60%. Is that true on some of these?
Yep. Yes, wow. It is. Yeah.
Wow. So have there always been, finally, Dr. Mose, have there always been tariffs? Have they always been political in nature? Are they ever purely economic, or is that kind of like, in case of emergency, break glass here to make your point, or are we just hearing about it more?
You know, Paul, that's a real good question. If you go back to the beginning of taxation in the U.S.,
yeah.
It was all tariff-based.
Really? Wow.
And excise-based, yeah. The income taxes didn't come until the 16th Amendment to the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 2000. I'm slipping here. That's 1913.
Yeah.
Before that, it was pretty much tariff-based, things like that. So it's nothing that's really new. I think the use of it as a threat or a deterrent is new, or at least we're just hearing about it. But it's working. I mean,
yeah,
you can't argue with success sometimes.
Well, exactly. Great to hear from you, Dr. James Mose, University of New Haven Associate Prof of Accounting and Taxation. Hey, Dr. Mose, good to hear from you again. Thank you, and we'll chat down the road, okay?
Thanks. Thanks, Paul. You take care.
Appreciate it, Dr. James Mose, Jim Mose, UNH. And he said, well, yeah, they, at least in this case, they tend to be working.